Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we seek the truth. We don't have any billionaires telling us what to say. We are independent journalists, and we try to cover the stories you might not see in the mainstream media. We try to cut through the propaganda, and we have a very busy show for you on this Thursday. A lot happening as it relates to the war in Ukraine, and we're going to look at China, because President Putin of Russia flying to meet with the Chinese president, also the Iranian president, but some very interesting moves in the United States Senate last night as it relates to Taiwan. All of this timing comes together in one big soup of geopolitical mess. So we are going to look at all of that.
We are also going to look at the country of Moldova, which is an interesting case study of a country that is in between East meets West. And it's another example about how politicians are telling you, you need to sacrifice, right? It's yours to take on. This absolutely is your burden, and you're not doing enough.
Right, for Russian sanctions and economic collapse. And so it's going to be an interesting study to look at. We're also going to look at why is someone or something buying up all of these United States farms? And we're going to tell you not only where the farms are, but we're also going to tell you who's behind this big move. And it's been happening for years, and the Biden administration has nothing to say about it. So we will talk about that.
I'll give you a little hint. It rhymes with Schmill Yates.
Or Gina. It rhymes with Gina.
Okay. Also, a new study from Harvard and other medical schools shows that vaccine booster mandates for college students is unethical because of the trade-off. We're going to break down that ratio and also talk about where in the world countries are paying out claims on serious adverse reactions to the COVID vaccine. So stay tuned for that.
Someone said to us the other day, please stay on this story. Please continue to cover this important story around vaccines. And we are. And Redacted starts right now. Welcome. Good to see all of you tonight. We are live, so good to see all of you in the chat, in the comments. Let us know where you're joining us from tonight. We get people from all over the world. I always like to see in their comments, like, where are the people most, like, the furthest? Do we have anybody from Iceland tonight? I'm going to call out Iceland. I've always wanted to go to Iceland, so I want to see Icelanders. Any Icelanders?
Okay.
I want to go to Reykjavik sometime. I'm reading a thriller about Iceland right now.
I also especially am interested in anyone from Moldova.
Yes.
Because I have questions for you. My research can only take me so far as an English speaker, and I do not speak Romanian, which is what they speak there. Would you consider Romanian a Romance language? I also want to hear from you on that, because I have a friend who is Romanian, and she does consider it a Romance language. Yeah,
I want to debate.
Yes, this is a fine debate. I welcome your comments on that.
We have a daily newsletter, which we would encourage all of you to subscribe to. If you go to redacted.inc, it's not .com, redacted.inc. Here's the website. When you click on it, you click on the newsletter section there. You can also become a channel supporter if you want, and then just add your email and you'll get our newsletter first thing in the morning, delivered to your inbox Monday through Friday. You can read it over your cup of coffee. See how short it is? You know, it's only like 5-10 minutes long. We'll show you the things you might have missed in the news overnight. We'll kind of run down the markets. We look at what's happening in the stock market, Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc. Then we also dive into the top stories and kind of give you the lowdown on things that we are covering. So again, go to redacted.inc. Natalie and I write it every morning over our cups of coffee, so we would love to share it with you. Just go to redacted.inc to subscribe. Yes. So thank you so much for subscribing and being a part of our great community here. Philip is in the house running the show. David is not with us tonight. How you doing, my friend? Camping.
Oh, that's right.
Take a few days.
All right.
Well, hey, everyone works hard around here. And so you need a few days off in the woods, you know, be out with Bigfoot. That's the way to go. All right, let's get to it. That's right. You guys are in the Pacific Northwest. Lots of Bigfoot, lots of Sasquatch. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about today's top story. Let's talk about the United States and what the United States is doing to take things a little too far with China as we enter potential war with China. And the battle over Taiwan could be coming very, very soon. We're going to cover that. We're going to talk about Vladimir Putin meeting with Xi Jinping. Also, the Iranian president in Uzbekistan, President Vladimir Putin just landing a short time ago and starting those meetings this afternoon. But something really strange, first of all, happened overnight. We want to address it because a number of you sent emails saying, have you seen this news about Putin? And I want to address it here, give you some updates on reports of an assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin. The report said that an explosion had rocked the cars in his motorcade while at the same time, simultaneously, or maybe a few hours apart, the motorcade for Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine was also hit by an automobile that drove straight into his car that he was driving.
Well, reports are that it hit his car and his entourage. So yeah. Multiple cars were hit and the other passenger was hospitalized.
Right. And Zelensky had to be taken also by ambulance to the hospital just to be checked, which is crazy. So what the hell is going on here? I mean, a potential assassination attempt on the motorcade, but I want to kind of get into that piece of this in a second. But we know that.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was the other driver, the person who hit the motorcade of Zelensky, right, was hospitalized and still remains. They have not said if there was any sort of nefarious foul play, but they said they will investigate.
Yeah. So we know that Zelensky was also hurt, maybe just like cuts and bruises, scratch or whatever, and then taken to the hospital. But he is okay. He was in the town of Izium for a flag raising ceremony. The town was recently recaptured by from Russia. He was on his way back to Kiev when this car smashed into his motorcade. Now, if you've ever seen a motorcade before, especially one that's like heavily armored and protected by NATO forces, it's very odd that a car would have access to be able to do something like that. They block intersections. They block overpasses, they block underpasses, they block all of that stuff.
Usually intersections are cleared well in advance, right? Yeah. We know we used to live near the Florham Park Airport, where Trump flew into all the time because he went to his Bedminster Club while he was president. And they would regularly close not just the roadways that he would travel, but the overpasses and the intersections.
Right. And we've seen these motorcades. I mean, we've been covering them, even the motorcade going to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, right? And the motorcade of the IAEA inspectors. We know that along that route, there were all sorts of protections made on that route at different intersections and overpasses to make sure that that IAEA inspection group, the motorcade, made it there safely.
Yes.
So again, odd, very odd that a car is able to make it through. Now, this was an area that's hotly contested. I mean, this is eastern. I mean, this is this is right up against Russia's border, right? This is very, very close. This is obviously a hotly contested area that's been they've been attacking for 8 solid years now. So it's not like there's people out there with flags waving that everyone's excited to see Zelensky rolling through. So well, anyway, we'll get more on this. He was able to do an address a little bit later that evening to the people of Ukraine. So he appeared to be fine, but he was put in an ambulance. The other side of it, though, is the Putin story, which is really strange, of course. That story comes on the heels of a number of health-related bullshit stories that we've seen that says he's dying of cancer, that there's about to be a coup, right? That all of his inner circle are going to overthrow him. I love these stories. Like, where do these stories even come from?
Yeah.
And now reports last night of an assassination attempt, that an explosion was heard near his motorcade, that he was uninjured. The original report came from an anti-Putin Telegram channel, so it's very important to point that out. It came from an anti-Kremlin, anti-Putin Telegram channel, and then it was later followed up by a number of news reports that followed the story. So it started there and then went to other news outlets. They said Putin was okay. The whole thing, though, seems really fishy to me. I have to say, on the Putin side. It does seem
both
really
sides seem fishy.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're both fishy. They're both oddly timed. But the Putin one particularly is like, is there any truth to it other than maybe it was a car tire or a car backfiring
and
nearby?
The way the Mirror, right, which is the British
tabloid.
Yes.
Yes.
The way they covered it was, well, this happened, and then sort of heads rolled inside his security.
Like they were all fired. It's
right. Because someone got access to it. Right. And sources say,
I mean, he's such a close knit group, and the idea that he's dying of cancer. Right. I love those stories that he's ill. Does he look ill to you? I mean, I don't know. There's going to be a coup attempt. Everyone's going to overthrow him. Okay, where are you getting this info? Are you plugged into the Kremlin, the Mirror online from Britain? Okay.
Well, he felt well enough to take a trip today.
Yeah, so anyway, it was he landed after that. He flew to Uzbekistan this afternoon. Just a few hours ago, Russian President Putin landed in Uzbekistan. There he is being welcomed on the tarmac there. Big to-do. They had a big flat-screen television outside welcoming him. For this big event. This, of course, is a big conference that they're meeting with, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. He's going to be meeting with world leaders that have nothing to do with Joe Biden, nothing to do with Justin Trudeau or Ursula von der Leyen. Instead, Putin's going to be meeting with Iranian President Raisi. He met with him today, actually. Chinese President Xi Jinping later this afternoon. And all of this comes at an interesting time as the United States, the deep state inside the United States, is getting closer to starting a war with China. The United States deep state desperately wants a war with China. And I'll explain why in just a moment. But first, some context around these meetings. A few weeks ago, President Vladimir Putin reorganized some of his government and didn't get much press at all. It wasn't really covered anywhere. We didn't really talk about it on our show at the time, and quite frankly, the Western media largely ignored the story, but it's incredibly important. And what it shows is that Vladimir Putin is actively restructuring the government to be more self-sufficient and self-reliant. Think about that for a second, right? Where a country like Russia can say, okay, all right, since 2014, you've had these sanctions in place against us. They've ramped up over the past year now. We have been putting things in place to make sure that our manufacturing and industrial power is strong, that we are self-reliant. And okay, if that's the way you want to play it, bye-bye. We're going to make new alliances and make sure that we're taken care of.
Yeah, less dependent on foreign imports, which is what a lot of countries gave lip service to after the pandemic.
Right.
Very few have done anything resembling that.
Lip service is a good way to put it, because we hear this all the time from we hear this from American political candidates.
Yes.
We hear this from EU candidate or
well,
EU
here in Portugal, we heard it from Antonio Costa, mm-hmm. right? So yes, this is something most people champion and very few make any headway on.
So he restructured a huge portion of his government. He gave promotions to a couple of people, a couple of big players inside of the Russian government, and doubling down on his relationship with China, with Saudi Arabia, with India, with Iran and Brazil. Recently, he made some promotions. Putin promoted some guys who have really built up Russia's manufacturing inside of Russia. Imagine that a country that produces its own things. One of the guys that Putin promoted, his name is Montarov. He's been traveling around inside Russia, going to different industrial hubs, meeting with different manufacturers of all sorts, making sure that they have the supplies that they need, making sure that everything is moving smoothly inside of Russia. He's been going to multiple manufacturing and industrial hubs all through Russia. Think about that. Can the same thing be said in the United States? We don't make anything. Like, where are you going to go? I mean, you're going to go to you're going to go to Indiana and go to the Carrier plant? No, because you know why? They moved to where? They moved to Mexico. Like, where are you going to go? You're not going to go anywhere. It's unbelievable, actually, when you think about it. Right? They manufacture everything. All the stuff that they need is pretty much manufactured there.
And mined there. The raw materials are also mined there.
Great point, right? So they have both the minerals and the manufacturing and the power to produce on their own, which is really stunning. Again, so when they went into this full-scale production since 2014, a lot of these guys inside the Putin government they weren't politics guys. They were straightforward, like under the Putin regime. They've gotten promoted now. Putin in the past few weeks has promoted some of these guys who've really built up the manufacturing and industrial. We don't build anything in the United States. So the deep state is really aiming towards a war with China, to start a war with China because of this very issue, because of the American hegemony, the lack of industrial power, and the rising of China. We've talked about on the show, China is set to become the world superpower by 2030, I think is the number, by 2030. So don't believe it me. Like, look what happened last night in the United States Senate. President Putin and Xi Jinping fly to Uzbekistan, and on the same day they're flying there, this happens in the United States Senate last night. There was a bipartisan support that passed the bill without any dissent, basically. It's a major change to the U.S. position towards Taiwan. And it will funnel billions of dollars in military support to Taiwan. Here's how it reads. I'll read the Dave DeCamp version of this on antiwar.com. Senate panel advances bill that would radically change U.S.-Taiwan policy. The Senate Armed Services Committee approved a bill on Wednesday that would radically alter the policy towards Taiwan and significantly escalate tensions with Beijing. The amended version of the Taiwan Policy Act would give Taiwan $6 billion in military aid, give the island the benefits of being a major non-NATO ally, expedite arms sales to Taipei, and require sanctions in the event of Chinese aggression. So, I mean, this is amazing. If the legislation makes it through Congress and it's signed by President Biden, it will be a major overhaul of U.S. policy towards China and Taiwan.
Yes, you think?
Yes, which was defined by the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act. Since 1979, the U.S. hasn't had any formal diplomatic relations with Taipei and China. And they're basically moving away from this towards a major provocation with China.
I mean, it can be quiet to us, but it's certainly not quiet to China. They will notice this, and it will be a topic of conversation in these meetings of what the United States considers adversaries.
Well, yeah, and they're saying, look, this is a major escalation. So, I mean, this is what China is seeing this as. China's basically saying the current U.S. policy to this is a knowingly engaged in a significant escalation in aggression, they say.
Yes.
That's exactly what this would say. Senator Rand Paul was one of the few who actually voted against it. He told Politico, this is not a time to radically change longstanding policy without an appreciation of the consequences that may follow, Rand Paul said. So all of this is meant to provoke a war with China. The United States deep state desperately wants a war with China for one very important reason, world dominance.
But by all accounts, the United States couldn't win a war like that.
Right.
And so the calculation is not necessarily to win, it's to weaken.
To weaken, to drive down their speed with which they will reach their industrial
with dominance. American lives, though. Like, we will go in and sacrifice lives of Americans in order to weaken this superpower. By some, an acceptable calculation of lives.
Because China will become, see, the thing is, what people don't understand is China doesn't want a war. And they don't have to do this. China is going to become the world superpower in just a few years without firing a bullet because of their industrial power. And the United States is collapsing. And so you see this relationship with Putin and Russia and China and Iran and Brazil, and they're doing it without firing a bullet. The way that the United States has two strengths, the U.S. dollar and the U.S. military.
And exportation of culture.
Yeah, but is that really, I mean...
I think that there's a currency of those two things,
that collapses, though.
It does, but it holds a lot of water. When you see people who sort of champion the United States, if for no other reason than because they like American culture.
Yeah, but without American military might and without the strength of the U.S. dollar, that declines.
I would just say it contributes to the cap rate, if you will.
Okay, I could see that. Yeah, maybe it's like icing on the cake of like what it means to support an America. I don't know.
It's a measure of goodwill internationally. I mean, I think that it may, however misplaced by some.
So the United States is the deep state in the United States is not going to sit by and watch the U.S. dollar collapse, and they are also not going to sit by and watch China rise to the world's economic superpower. That means a replacement of the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. And it is a dominant position. Also, China is ramping up its nuclear weapon production, not because it wants to use them, but because it gets them a seat at the table. You know, Russia has 6,000 nuclear warheads, right? Mm-hmm. Their weapons now, China's weapons, we've had a number of weapons experts here on the show talk about China's like hypersonic missiles and other weapons that the United States can't touch. The United States has really strong nuclear submarines, but we'd have to travel, as General McGregor said, you'd have to travel thousands of miles to attack China, and they can absorb anything that we throw at them, thousands of miles away to attack them in the Taiwan Strait. So this is a clear provocation of trying to keep China down, to try to weaken them or slow their move towards dominant superpower.
Yeah.
So this really, this battle of Taiwan, this coming battle, this coming war, this is where all focus should be. We've said all along that the, you know, what's going on in Ukraine is just the, it's like the preamble to all of this. It's important to understand that China is not interested at war with the United States at all. For one very important reason, China is already set to win. They've already set to become the global superpower. So for them to enter a war with the United States, it slows that process down. It slows their speed to dominance down. If they have to now be fighting us in the Taiwan Strait, if they have to be fighting us other places, they don't want to have to do that. That would be a distraction. Think about it. They've been working, trying to complete their Belt and Road Initiative.
Yeah.
And this would slow that down dramatically. Rail lines, shipping lines in the South Pacific, rail lines and roadways and bridges all through Europe and Asia would be totally slowed down.
And not to mention, it would really shoot the United States in the foot because so much of American consumption is from China.
Right. So just to wrap this up, I want to point you to a RUSI report. Now, RUSI, R-U-S-I, is basically the British version of the RAND Corporation. Fascinating reports. You should read them from time to time because if for nothing else than to see what the... It's a think tank, and they're studying deeply like what is happening in these regions. RUSI published an amazing report on Ukraine, and what it showed was Russia has immense industrial capacity and the United States doesn't. And it showed that America is losing the industrial war. And so all of the ammunition that Russia is firing, it takes them about 1 month to produce. It would take the United States 3 years to produce the amount of ammunition that Russia is firing within 1 month. And you remember, President Biden had to fly to Alabama and meet with Raytheon to try to get them to ramp up production on weapons.
And use the Emergency Authorization Act in order to get them raw material first before consumers.
Right. That's true. I forgot about that piece of it. So having to pull a rabbit out of a hat, basically.
Yes.
Well, no, Russia already has that infrastructure, already has that manufacturing infrastructure. So all of this to say that the industrial war is the first piece to fall, and the United States is losing the industrial war piece of this. A number of indicators are, we've been talking about this all summer, frankly, how the United States is having to ramp up production on this. And a lot of the weapons that they've been sending to Russia have been arguably failing, and mothballed old weapons that like where batteries don't even work. So the industrial capacity of the United States compared to this alliance with Russia and China is damning. So China responded to this move about increasing ties to Taiwan. This was what the ambassador, Chinese ambassador, warning that increasing U.S. ties with Taiwan could lead to war. So where does this all point to? It does. It leads to war. China's ambassador to the U.S. warned that Washington's increasing support for Taiwan could ultimately lead to a war with U.S. and China. He said, it's emboldening independence forces in Taiwan. If the Taiwanese authorities, emboldened by the United States, keep going down the road for independence, it most likely will involve China and the United States, the two big countries, in the military conflict. And the death, I mean, at the end of the day, the death of the U.S. hegemony.
I mean, I think this is important to remember, especially if you are someone who has a child who can be drafted or you can be drafted yourself into a conflict like this, to ask yourself, do I think it is worth anybody's life to go just to bring down another country who is sort of keeping its eye on its own paper, right? Manufacturing, building things, selling things, making things. And China is by no means perfect, right? But would I give the life of my child just to weaken a competitor? No,
Right.
Right. This is not an acceptable risk. And when inevitably we are dragged into a conflict like this, we have to think like, don't, whatever they're going to tell us, right, about the Uyghurs or whatever else, like, you know, is it worth the lives of the people I love? I'm going to preemptively say no.
No. And, you know, it's also important to point out that the White House was upset or not on board fully with this legislation that the Senate was trying to pass and that did pass. So to me, it's clear that it is the United States deep state that wants this.
Yes.
The military industrial complex. It is the people. Biden's just a puppet, right? These are the, and so if the White House is hesitant because they know this could lead, he's only there for 4 years. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe eight if he somehow miraculously wins a reelection, right? But they know that these elected politicians are gone, and it's those deep state actors in the intelligence community, at the Federal Reserve, and at the military industrial complex that want this war.
You know, it brings to mind a piece that I watched on Rachel Maddow about 3 years ago during the Trump administration. That's her extrapolation was that Russia's military gear was so old and jank, right?
That's what she was saying.
This is what she was saying, that they want to control Trump in order to boost their international reputation and make us think they're awesome, because they're not awesome. They're really all rusty and broken down, right? This was absolutely her narrative.
It's hilarious. Now it's the exact opposite.
Right.
We're actually seeing the exact opposite. And you know what's funny about that is that Russia didn't like respond to that, but that propaganda and BS.
Yes.
They're like, oh, fine. That's great. You want to believe that our stuff is old and rusty and jank?
I mean, she put a ship on the screen, was like, look, this ship is old and jank. It's the jalopy of warships. That's what they got, right? I mean, and me as an audience, I don't know what they've got, right? I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting, right?
Right.
The data doesn't seem to support that, but this is what people who are left-leaning are being told. We're much better than them. We absolutely could take them in a fight, right? It's this my dad can beat up your dad,
right,
type of thing. And, you know, don't worry about it. We got it taken care of, Harry.
We got it taken care of, Harry.
Right?
Come on.
Totally redeem yourself.
Our pets' heads are falling off.
Those are Dumb and Dumber lines. Yes. Did you catch those, Philip?
Yes, I hope so. Like, what the hell are they talking?
Okay.
I did not. No, sorry. My audio was off. I did not catch that. No.
We have such a big international audience that I don't know how many people would like know.
We'll catch our little movie quips. Okay.
But anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this and the coming war with China. Again, this is not propaganda. We're seeing it in action, folks. So let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below in the comments section. So, and by the way, to be a subscriber, just click the subscribe button and your name will pop right up here on the big screen as you subscribe during the show. So you can become a subscriber and then chat along with us during our live show. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about Moldova, which is really a bellwether for collapse economically in Europe, and what that means for the rest of the world, and how it's, you know, what the United States is going through as well. We're also going to look at who in the world is buying up all of the U.S. farmland. And why is the Biden administration not doing anything about it? Is it a national security risk? We'll talk about that. Plus college booster shots. Is it unethical to force college kids to get booster shots when they go back? All of that and more, but first.
All right, we're going to tell you about the case study of Moldova, because it is a terrible example of what happens when countries get caught up between their own loyalties. First, a little background. Where is Moldova? Well, right now, Moldova is still between.
It didn't move overnight?
Well, there are border disputes, but as we speak, Moldova is between Romania and Ukraine. Moldova is not in the European Union, but it has a treaty called the Moldova-EU Association Agreement that establishes the political and economic association. So for geopolitical sake, it is tied to the European Union. Therefore, it is suffering just as much as all other European countries, if not worse than its neighbors, due to political actions that are tanking the economy. Now, Moldova was given a fast-track application to the EU in June when it was announced that Ukraine would also get this fast track. So Moldova has a lot to prove to the EU right now. They're really watching them, like, okay, we're going to give you this, like, kind of like, I don't know how sororities and fraternities work, but I get the idea that like if someone gives you the opportunity to pledge, they watch to make sure that you're like Kappa whatever material, right? Right. This is right. How it is. Like they've been pledged. Now they have to go through the hazing.
What are some of the requirements, right? Some of those requirements then are like, hey, you want to enforce Russian sanctions.
Yes.
You have to play by our rules.
So these are the pledging activities that are going on right now. Okay, so that's why Moldova has a lot to prove right now. But where does Moldova get most of its gas?
Where everyone else gets their gas?
Gazprom, right.
Russia.
The Russian state energy company, Gazprom. The country is set to renegotiate debt payments with Gazprom by October 1st. And the prime minister does, in fact, feel that this needs to be done. Europe doesn't want her to, obviously, but she feels like she has to, even as she asks her citizens to sacrifice. So here is Natalia Gavrilita. She says, even if Gazprom continues the deliveries, we still have to reduce consumption. That means you and me, right? How much she's going to be doing, I don't know, but she wants her citizens to, because the prices are very, very high, she said in this interview in Bucharest on Tuesday. She says the soaring prices are an anomaly for the summer, and we don't know how much they will continue to grow during the winter.
I have an idea how much they're going to grow during the winter. Like this is, yes. Oh, it's just the summer. It's, because it's so hot out, you really want to heat your homes during the summer. So.
Right. We're going to talk about the climate of like summer in the Northern Hemisphere in a minute, because they're assuming we don't know that summer is hot in the Northern Hemisphere. They have, now the government is shooting for a 15% reduction in energy consumption. How they're doing their part is that in the capital, they've switched from gas to oil heaters. That helps only a little when inflation is currently at 30%.
30%?
30%.
Holy shit. That's,
yes.
You think your 8% is bad or was, right. 8% in the US? 30%. Well, which also is probably an insight into how fake the U.S. numbers actually are. As we've said, it's probably double that anyway. But anyway, 30%, holy smokes.
But Moldova also has a Russian-controlled area inside their borders called Transnistria. I apologize if I mispronounce that. I've practiced many times today. The way it's spelled is Transnistria. Here's a map of the sliver along the border between Moldova and Ukraine, which is right now controlled by Russian military. Moldova does not officially recognize this as a breakaway state, but they are saying that they're communicating with leaders there. This region does have its own president, its own government. The US, the EU, and NATO, of course, do not recognize it. They say, no, you're Moldova, and knock this off. But they operate independently. Now, the prime minister, Gavrilita, that we just talked about, she said she is in talks with leaders in Transnistria because what she says, we want to keep peace and stability in the country. The worry is that Russia will defend that region just like it is defending the eastern borders of Ukraine. They obviously don't want that. They don't feel like they are game for that kind of conflict at all, especially while they're hurting from so much sanctions. Now, how are citizens of Moldova taking all of this political alliance with Europe?
That's a question, right? I mean,
protests. They are protesting, just like in the Czech Republic, just like in Austria and many other places. People are protesting. By many accounts, thousands came out this weekend, and there's another planned for September 18th, I believe. I dare you to Google it because you do not find, at least if you're an English speaker. Now, I don't Google in Romanian. They speak a dialect of Romanian in Moldova, so I can't see that. But it is very hard if you are an English speaker to find evidence of this just using a search engine.
Well, we saw that in Germany, right? The German protests, that was suppressed in the media. I mean, it was actually blocked on social media accounts, the protests in Berlin and in Leipzig in Germany, coming out against the EU and against high gas prices. I guess it turns out like if your government artificially does shit that makes it hard for your family to live, you don't like that. And you rise up and you tell them, you don't like that. I don't like having my gas. I have to switch to oil because of some ridiculous Russian sanction.
Well, these protesters are specifically protesting pro-NATO alliances, pro-EU alliances, and they want the resignation of President Maya Sandu, who is a pro-European politician who caused the country to have sort of a reportedly, her election pissed off Vladimir Putin because, you know, she is more aligned with the West. Now, again, we're asking for your cooperation. If you speak Romanian, please do send us information about these protests, because what we are able to see in the Western media is very, very little.
Yeah, if you want to share, if you've got there, if you were at some of these protests, please send some videos to us. We'll share them here on the show. You can email them to me, clayton@redacted.inc. We will share them
here on the show. Or tag us on social media, anything like that. Meanwhile, the media is busy telling you that businesses are doing their part to reduce consumption of fossil fuels. But it's the households that really are the sort of wild card, right? So this Wall Street Journal article from today really pissed me right off. Look at the headline. It says, "Households a wild card as Europe moves to end Russian gas dependence."
Oh, so it's you, it's your personal house that we can't control.
It's consumers, it's not businesses. Even though when it comes to carbon footprint and energy consumption and all things, you know, environmental, the data shows that you personally can't do shit, right? It's really businesses that make a big difference. But look at this headline. "A painful push by businesses to cut their natural gas use is bringing Europe closer to its goal of weaning itself off Russian energy. Getting consumers to follow suit might prove more difficult." Because you know what? They're doing their part, but you just can't, because you are a consumptive pig. Right? That's what they're telling us. They say, this is crazy. I can't not have my mouth wide open, but I'm going to try and tell you it anyway. They say businesses have cut an average of 15% in energy costs since the war in Ukraine began. Only well down the article do they admit that the war started at the end of winter. So heating costs naturally will go down since the course of this war, right?
Oh, you mean when it's spring?
So yes, they assume that you don't know that people don't use heating in the summer of the Northern Hemisphere, right? Like, we're not talking about a war in June in Argentina where it is winter. Like, here in the Northern Hemisphere, we haven't needed heaters
right
since around March, April time, right? So, and okay, so here's what they say. "In the first half of this year, total German gas use dropped about 15% annually, according to this association. Last winter's mild weather accounted for nearly half of that reduction, according to this group." Wait, didn't you just tell me, though, that it's businesses that are making such strides? Now you're telling me it's really because the weather's been nice? That's some bullshit. Okay.
So basically you're giving props to these businesses and they're not really doing shit.
They're not doing anything, but they're saying you're not doing your part. Now they say in Munich, a similar reduction of 15% during this period is completely due to the temperature difference, said this spokesperson. So it's not like businesses are so pious and making all these big sacrifices and you just can't, you know, get in line. It's just that they didn't need their heaters in the summer.
Right.
Just like households didn't either. And in Europe, we know that air conditioners are not nearly as common as they are in the West. So even though it was a hot summer, air conditioners don't use gas. They are electric.
Right.
So that wouldn't have factored into this. So sure, yes, we all should absolutely reduce, reuse, recycle. But I'm not buying that it has to be consumers. This article is total propaganda telling you that you're not doing your part because businesses have, when the data does not support this.
Well, again, when you look at Wall Street Journal owned by the Murdochs,
right?
I mean, again, follow, this is why we are, you know, we are independent on this show. Follow the money, follow the agenda of the publications and the news media. This is, again, they are absolutely a part of the move towards a great reset and actual and this climate initiative, members of the Murdoch family. So it's not surprising at all that this, and it's a very pro-business newspaper, of course. Wall Street Journal is like up the ass of businesses. So of course they're going to be kissing their ass.
So don't buy for 1 second that businesses are doing their part, but you're not. Like even the, if we go back to this article, this Wall Street Journal, you know, there's a picture here of a baker. Are they telling us that he's baking less baking fewer rolls in order to help the war efforts. I don't understand.
Or he's turning the lights off throughout the afternoon just to conserve because of Putin's price hike.
I don't know. And maybe
and so they want grandma to, you know, to sit under blankets at home. Like your German grandma has to sit under blankets at home and turn down the heat. And
yes,
if she even has heat, because there's, you know, they're not going to have gas even turned on. And if she's able to even find firewood, like where the hell are you going to get that at this point? It's her fault. It's grandma's fault.
And the narrative that bothers me so much, I think it might not have if we had not just been through a pandemic where only individuals sacrificed to get us to the same goal where, you know, had we not made these sacrifices, we probably would be in the same spot in the pandemic.
Like Target and Walmart. It wasn't sacrificing. It was record profits.
But we were sacrificing on cheap energy. Now we're saying we must sacrifice on cheap energy. That hurts the elderly and the poor first, right? But we were told that we had to sacrifice our entire lives to help the elderly and the sick for 2 years.
Right.
But now we don't have to do that. We shouldn't, you know, the government won't front us on this one to keep our economies going in order to protect this population that we all just sacrificed for 2 years to protect. So I'm calling extreme bull crap on this narrative. And apparently many others are too, and they are protesting. I'm going to find myself a protest to go to.
Well, we're not, I mean, this isn't just Europe. I mean, California is the same thing. We're seeing this across the United States, right? Where you're being told, okay, we don't plug in your car in California, don't plug in your car because we're facing these blackouts because of our electricity. We cannot afford it. We can't do it right now. Please don't plug in your car. And also don't drive a car. Don't buy gasoline.
Don't own a car.
Don't own a car. Don't buy a car. Don't plug in the electric car that we told you to buy. Don't do that either. And then on top of that, grocery prices skyrocketing. Again, we're seeing the consumer price index come out overnight up to 8.3%. So again, you just thought, oh, prices are going to start to go down. No, sorry. Up higher, 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 higher. The value of a dollar going down, down, down.
Well, at this point, it looks like at least in the United States, there will be a rail strike that was averted because the Labor Department seems to have negotiated with the unions and come to some type of agreement. We don't have that firmed up at this point, but if there had been a rail strike, those inflation numbers would be much, much worse. And it would have been a bloodbath for Democrats. They really didn't want this going into the election.
Yeah. So this was the White House this afternoon was quick to come out and say, hey, that's great news. We've averted this catastrophe. But again, to your point, they haven't written it down yet. We don't have an actual firmed up plan, but 57,000 railroad conductors are going to at least remain on the job. And that means the transportation of goods across the United States will not drive numbers crazy. So good news on that front.
Well, for me, it's funny because like I look at this and I'm like, you know, if do you want a global revolution? Because this is how you get a global revolution.
Yeah.
And you actually like I saw an article, I think a couple weeks ago, roundabout where billionaires actually know this is coming. They know how like screwed the people are because of all of these backdoor deals and all of the like, you know, the corporations doing what they're doing, that billionaires are actually like building bunkers and hiring private armies because they know this is coming.
Oh,
they
geez.
Know that these
yes.
that people will fight back.
I'm glad you brought this up. In fact, there's a new book that I'm just about to read. It's by Douglas Rushkoff. He is an author. He was a tech writer, and he actually has been invited to speak to these billionaires because he covers like big changes in the tech world and like how this will affect people. So he was invited out to speak to this group of billionaires who are actively building bunkers, and they know. And he went out there to give the speech. He thought it was going to be like a speech in front of like 1,000 people, and it was 5 people. It was 5 billionaires. They're like, here's your speech. They flew him out in this desert location, and they went into this room, and they're like all actively, they're like, how do we protect ourselves? What happens when the dollar collapses? How do we pay our group of Navy SEALs that we've hired to protect our staff and our families? Like, they hire Navy SEALs. They hire Special Forces people to protect themselves.
That's
in these
crazy.
Bunkers. Peter Thiel, building a bunker in New Zealand, just built, you know, so all of these guys are actively doing this stuff because they know shit's about to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy. I'll find that name. Rushkoff. Douglas Rushkoff is the author, and he has a new book that I'm going to actually, it's on my list to read, called Survival of the Richest. So it's a new book that I'm about to check out and read. Anyway, we've got more news to get to here on the show. We are going to talk about who's buying up all the U.S. farmland. Really, really troubling story. It's maybe not who you think it is. And we're going to look at college booster shots and why the unethical nature of forcing people to do that at colleges is getting some backlash. But first,
we want to tell you about a new show sponsor called MedCline that we are super excited about, because Clayton and I have been able to test this product in the last week. And I want to tell you that it is life-changing. So yes. What it is now, I have That's been, me. Yeah, this is Clayton right here using it. And it is basically a configuration of pillows that elevates you as well as creates space for your arm if you're a side sleeper like me. Now, I had been sort of making a version of this with various shapes and pillows before. And then this thing showed up and I'm like, this is exactly what I do with just, you know, old pillows. I have since I've had three pregnancies and I never have been able to give up the maternity pillow that goes between your knees. It's basically just like a long tube that I put between my knees and I use as a side sleeper. Well, this thing makes that obsolete because it has something that can go around your knees as well as this pillow that elevates you, and you can put something soft for your head, and then you put your arm underneath. What my problem was that my shoulder would cut off circulation, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night with my hand basically throbbing from having the blood circulation cut off, and then I'd have to wake up and shake it out. So this, it's genius, you guys. Now, there are several different ways that you can configure this so that for however you sleep, if you're more side sleeper, more of a back sleeper, more of a stomach sleeper. In fact, 95% of patients report an overall improvement in sleep quality. I want to say, I gave up drinking about over a year ago, and that improved my sleep from like 1 to 1,000. And this thing has improved my sleep from like 1,000 to 10,000.
Well, I suffered from enormous shoulder pain. Like for the past 3 years, it was so painful to wake up with the shoulder problems. And I was telling Philip before the show, like I've tried all manner of pillows. Yeah. I've had like, if you come to the bedroom, there's like a pile of pillows that failed. So when we got this MedCline last week and I tried it and I spoke to the CEO of the company, I said, I got to tell you, this has been a game changer for me because now I don't have that shoulder pain anymore. It's gone because I'm able to put my arm through that hole and it's my whole upper body is supported and I don't have that neck pain and the shoulder pain anymore. So
now, look, we can talk a blue streak about this, but you have to see for yourself. So if you go to medcline.com/redacted, you can get 20% off, but you also can just see these testimonies, see what the product is. The wedge that sort of lifts you at an incline, it's a lot like what we do for babies, right? To help with stomach acid reflux. It can help you too. It's not just, you know, it's not just babies that need that. Any sleep problem you've got, this thing will help. It's actually a medical device, not just a sleep device. It's fantastic. So they are offering you 20% off when you go to medcline.com/redacted. Once again, get 20% off a better night's sleep. I mean, I would pay more than a premium for that, I'm telling you. Medcline.com/redacted, and I will stop gushing now. But yes, I'm going to sleep awesome tonight. You should too.
Try it. I'm telling you what. My sister messaged me. She's like, what is that? I got to get one. Got to get one. So we sent her the code. We sent her the 20% redacted code. So go and get it and try it yourself.
Anybody who hasn't bought it yet, they'll be getting this for Christmas.
Yes, that's right. My whole family's going to get one for Christmas. All right. All right, we've got more news to get to here. Please subscribe to the channel if you are new here. We are supported by our show sponsors, so thank you so much for supporting them. We are independent, so thank you for your support of the folks that support our show. We really appreciate it. All right, let's talk about what is happening in the United States with farmland. For years, something really strange has been happening around the United States and Canada. Chances are that when you drive to work tomorrow, or when you drive home from work today, you're going to be driving through your town, and chances are you're going to be driving past hundreds of acres of farmland that are owned by the Chinese Communist government. And you might not even know about it, have any idea about it. In fact, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, China now owns over 191,000 acres of U.S. lands. But that was before a North Dakota land sale that just occurred in the spring. Now China owns even more. Of course, we talked about Bill Gates here on the show, right? Buying up North Dakota farmland. The Chinese government just bought 300 acres in North Dakota, and they plan to open a milling plant there. What in the world is happening? But what's interesting is that this isn't just farmland in the middle of nowhere. In fact, the farmland that the Chinese government happens to be buying sits next to or adjacent to U.S. military bases. Let me repeat that. The farmland that the Chinese Communist government is buying is being bought near U.S. military bases.
Okay.
But what's interesting isn't that it's not just in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's specifically targeting certain areas where they're building, in fact, super secret drones and all sorts of other things. Here's how the Agriculture Department played this story when this first broke in North Dakota. Watch this.
Three Republican senators are calling for a review of a Chinese manufacturer's purchase of farmland near Grand Forks, North Dakota. Fufen Group bought roughly 370 acres of land near the Grand Forks Air Force Base. Senators Kevin Cramer and John Hoeven of North Dakota and Marco Rubio of Florida sending a letter to Biden administration officials wanting the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. to review the deal. Now, they're concerned the company's operations could have national security implications due to being located 12 miles from the Air Force base. In November of last year, Grand Forks announced the company had selected the city as a location for its new wet corn mill. Now, the COO for the company's American subsidiary tells the Grand Forks Herald his company is not an espionage threat and is not owned by the Chinese government.
Oh, okay. But that's just one situation. That's just one example of all of this. White House National Security Director John Kirby yesterday was pressed on this issue. Reporters, by the way, this reporter had sent this information to the White House weeks ago and was like demanding answers to be able to write about this. Like, what's the White House response? What's the National Security Department's response on this? Anything? Please let us know. So finally, John Kirby gets up there and he's taking questions, and this reporter managed to get some answers about why China is buying up farmland near U.S. military installations. Listen to him dodge this question.
Given the fact that known adversary, in the case of China, foreign buyers are buying up U.S. real estate, in some cases farms around military installations, is this on the administration's radar, and what is being done perhaps to study this or to protect Americans from making sure that homes remain affordable and so on?
I think the question of home ownership is a little bit out of my swim lane, but
particularly when it comes to around military installations.
What I will tell you is that the president has been nothing but clear about our concerns about Chinese unfair trade practices and economic practices. I understand that, ma'am, but
buying up land around military installations.
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to ask about homeowners.
It's not about home ownership, John Kirby. It's about buying farmland that you're going to be building, manufacturing, milling, and adjacent to national military installations.
Isn't foreign investment something we should ask the State Department about?
You would think we'd ask about this, but he's like, oh, it's about home ownership. China's not building homes there. They're right. Not building like residential homes. They're building
like China's moving in next door. Like, yeah. You know, China's moving in. It's fine.
It's part of a new wacky CBS sitcom called China Moved In Next Door.
But the U.S. State Department is perfectly comfortable warning other countries against Chinese investment. Right. That caused a scandal last year in Portugal when the State Department said that Portugal needs to be more leery of Chinese investment in Portugal. And the Portuguese government's like, don't tell us what to do. So they're super, super, super comfortable lecturing other countries to keep an eye on this, but won't do it for themselves.
Let's listen to the rest of this, shall we?
about buying up land around military installations. Is that a concern to this administration?
I sent this to your office last week. They've had a week to look at this, including the articles.
Okay, we can get back to you afterwards. We're going to move on. Go ahead, April.
So he leans over literally to Jean-Pierre, Corinne Jean-Pierre, and he's like, you got to get me out of this. He's like, wait, can you tell her to shut up, please? Like, she asked a question, I can't answer it, so can you? And he's just like, not going to answer your question. Just going to keep looking at you like this. I told you, I don't know about home ownership. I don't know about mortgages and homes. I'm just going to keep looking at you like this because I've got my condescending smirk on.
That is condescending.
So China, according to an investigation, according to a number of reports, buyers from the People's Republic of China purchased $6.1 billion in the United States real estate market in 2021. In 2021, the most of any foreign buyer. The Chinese government bought those 300 acres just recently, but in addition, through all of these subsidiaries buying up U.S. farmland to the tune of hundreds of thousands of acres across the United States, just down the road from military bases. That, by the way, in North Dakota was a drone manufacturer. And that's where this base was. It was a U.S. military drone base that China just made a huge purchase nearby, about 10, 12 miles away. And according to an investigation by CNN, they did this whole big land investigation on this. Since 2017, federal officials have investigated Chinese land purchases near critical infrastructure, shut down a high-profile regional consulate believed by the U.S. government to be a hotbed of Chinese spies, and stonewalled what they saw as clear efforts to plant listening devices near sensitive military and government facilities. It goes on. Among the most alarming things the FBI uncovered pertains to Chinese-made Huawei equipment atop cell towers near U.S. military bases in rural Midwest.
That seems safe.
Yeah. According to multiple sources familiar with the matter, the FBI determined the equipment was capable of capturing and disrupting highly restricted Defense Department communications at these bases, including those used by U.S. Strategic Command, you know, the ones that fire missiles, which oversees the country's nuclear weapons. So, according to according to the Wall Street Journal, also separately on this piece, according to the Wall Street Journal, they can't even figure out how much land Chinese bought because our computer systems are so antiquated that they're not even able to go back far enough to identify who the buyers were in the software. They can't, the land records, like they estimate that it's way higher, but because our systems are so antiquated, we don't know. Like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, we can't figure out who owns these things.
Jesus.
And in fact, this is, I'm quoting now from this Wall Street Journal piece, the government transparency of these investments falls short of basic standards. Until a few months ago, USDA's online reports went back only as far as 2004, and the data required special software to extract. Information on older purchases could be obtained only through Freedom of Information Act requests. Officials have admitted that they don't have filings related to foreign purchases of American farmland, and the data on such transactions contains errors. Okay. So I'm sure it's no big deal being able to set up Huawei equipment in... this was a concern through Europe, by the way. Why certain European countries said no to China setting up Huawei installations and cell towers because of spying and, you know, surveillance. So the United States is actively allowing the Chinese government to buy up farmland in and around... why are they doing this, by the way? Why are they just allowing this to happen?
And why is it going under the radar?
Right. And, oh, by the way, we're not going to answer your questions, the Biden administration. Like, we're not going to do this. We're not going to answer your questions. Move along, little lady. I don't have any answers for you. Really disturbing. And really condescending, too, by the way.
Yes. I don't know.
Keep your eyes on that space. Anyway, we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about these college boosters and what's happening there, why this is, they're saying this is unethical at best. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Nugenix. Look, if you getting a little bit older and you're getting kind of the dad bod, feeling a little less like your old self, you don't have time to work out, but you wanted the energy of the body that you once had. Well, that's where Nugenix comes in. Nugenix has their Total T Boost Free Testosterone, that basically when the aging process goes through, it robs you of this testosterone. You're going to feel stronger, leaner, with more energy and drive thanks to Nugenix. You'll have more passion too. Your partner will notice the difference. Well, every product professes quality. Many other products use generic ingredients that are often far less than clinical grade. So with Nugenix Total T, you get the same clinical potency levels used in the trials. And Nugenics formulation is backed by 10 years of research. So if you want more energy to counter the negative effects of aging, Nugenics Total T Testosterone Booster with Testofen will help you turn back the clock and re-energize your workouts. You get better results at the gym and help you look and feel like the man you really want to be. Nugenics Total T can help you re-energize your life and get back to the powerful, confident, good-looking warrior that you used to be. You know, like your college days, feel like that, you're going to get it. That's why it's the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. So now, to get a complimentary bottle of Nugenics Total T when you text the word redacted to 231-231, just pick up your phone and text the word, when you text redacted to 231-231, you'll get a bottle of Nugenics Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help get you back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text the word redacted to 231-231. Again, that's text redacted to 231-231. Messages and data rates may apply. Terms apply, available at nugenics.com/terms. So our thanks to Nugenics.
All right. Well, a new study asserts that COVID boosters for college students is an unethical risk. Now, what does that mean? It means that it is not ethical to force them to take a booster or else risk disenrollment, which is currently the policy at many American colleges. In fact, if they still have a vaccine requirement for students and staff, that many require a current booster as well. That means if you had to have full COVID vaccination as well as a recent booster. It can't have been last year or they kick you out of class. Researchers at Research One Universities conducted this study. Here is a list of the professors that worked on this. So if you look closely, you see they are from, University of Oxford, University of Toronto, Harvard, University of Edinburgh, University of Washington, UC San Francisco, Johns Hopkins, right? Florida Department of Health and Sierra Nevada Memorial Hospital. What these researchers did was they analyzed how many college-age students will be hospitalized from COVID without these boosters or the full vaccination versus how many will be injured by the vaccine. Now, we have established, because Pfizer told us, that there are such thing as adverse reactions. They call them SAE, serious adverse events, right, or effects. We do know that the population more prone to myocarditis is boys in their teens or just after. So basically college age.
So right in this wheelhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
So given this population, that given that they are more prone to adverse reactions, but less prone to hospitalization due to COVID, what is the ratio? It's actually very shocking. Look at the study, what the study says itself. It says using CDC and sponsor reported adverse events data, we find that booster mandates may cause a net expected harm per COVID-19 hospitalization prevented in previously uninfected young adults. We anticipate 18 to 98 serious adverse events, including 1.7 to 3.0 booster-associated myocarditis cases in males, and 1,373 to 3,234 cases of grade 3 or above reactogenicity, which interferes with daily activities, so that's basically other adverse events. Given the high prevalence of post-infection immunity, this risk-benefit profile is even less favorable. That means if you've had COVID, right, and you have immunity from natural infection, it's an even worse sort of ratio. So it means that
So wait, let me understand that. If you take the boot, like if you've had it COVID before, you have natural immunity and you take the booster, it's actually more problematic.
Right. So what they're saying here is that for every one hospitalization prevented, there will be 18 to 98 serious adverse effects.
Wow.
That is an extremely unfavorable ratio, right? Yeah. For every one person who does not get hospitalized, then, and again, like the resulting death ratio in college students is even lower, right? That 18 to 98 will be harmed, right? This paper is not yet peer reviewed, but it takes the data directly from Pfizer's own published SAEs, the serious adverse events that we affects from their own clinical trials, which we have gone over on this show many times. And again, they say that they calculated 19 to 98 SAEs based on a university population of 30,000 students.
Wow.
So again, of those, only one has the risk of hospitalization, yet far more have a risk of SAE. So they extrapolate that those things, that this is unethical because of these five reasons. One, no formal risk-benefit assessment exists for this age group. They're trying to do that right now. Like, hey, let's do a risk-benefit assessment. No one's bothered to do that until now. That is curious, don't you think? Two, vaccine mandates may result in a net expected harm to individual young people. Three, mandates are not proportionate. Four, U.S. mandates violate the reciprocity principle because rare, serious vaccine-related harms will not be reliably compensated. I want to talk about that in a second. And five, they think mandates create wider social harm. Now, number four is especially interesting because it says that if they are injured, there's no compensation for them. They have nowhere to go because of gaps in current vaccine injury schemes, right?
Which means basically that these manufacturers, of course, have immunity.
But so do the colleges, it would seem, right? So like we do see, for instance, we've talked about litigation against the military for punishing people for vaccine mandates, for not complying. Mm-hmm. And those people, I do believe, have a case, right? Is there something in enrollment, perhaps?
Well, I mean, you're signing, that's a good question, right? You're going to a university, you're signing your rights away, I guess, in some regard, because you're agreeing to go to this campus.
Right, and take the booster as a result. Yeah. So perhaps there's something there that they have given up, that there is some kind of immunity that the university has, or we know already that the vaccine manufacturers have immunity, so they will not be able to be compensated if they are harmed.
It's like double immunity, because we know the vaccine manufacturers, yes, they have this deep level of immunity from the government.
Yes. In
these contracts, they can't be sued for anything. And that's why a lot of these things, it seems, have been thrown out of court. Some of the ones that have been able to prevail have been the ones about religious exemption.
Yes.
So religious exemption could be maybe the thing that we also see pop up against on college campuses. Like, you have a religious exemption for taking this, but the college says you have to take it. Do you get kicked out? And then, I mean, I don't know. They could say you can choose not to go here to this university.
Sure.
You know, you can go somewhere else.
Yes.
I find it very ironic that of these mandates, I'll choose my words very carefully here. Of these mandates, the people getting immunity are obviously the government themselves, the manufacturers, the vaccine manufacturers, businesses that required employees to do so. Now universities, they're all getting immunity from these vaccine mandates, but who isn't getting actual immunity during this?
And that's individuals,
the people that took it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, oh, no. Yeah. And I'm not
the actual
right.
Word,
oh,
immunity.
I'm doing a play on words. I get it.
The
I like it.
Actual immunity.
Yes, you are right. But actually, some countries have quietly started compensating vaccine injuries. Not the U.S., but I have a rundown of who is. Are you interested?
Yes.
Okay.
These are people, say this again, these are people
so
who...
these are certain countries have already begun to compensate individuals for injuries for these SAEs due to mandates. Wow. So, okay, first off, in July, the Japanese government awarded a lump sum payment to the family of a woman who died from allergic response to the vaccine. A Ministry of Health panel ruled that a causal relationship, quote, could not be denied in her case, because after her vaccine, she had a sudden heart attack. Her family will receive a lump sum worth $325,000. According to the Japan Times, 3,680 people have applied for compensation. 820 have been approved and 62 denied, with decisions on 16 being postponed.
Wow.
In Taiwan, moving on, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program held a meeting to review 65 cases of SAEs. They awarded compensation to 10 claimants, including a lump sum worth $116,000 to the family of someone who died after receiving the AstraZeneca vaccine. In June, the UK began paying vaccine injury compensation. Victims there are eligible for $150,000. And as of May, 1,681 claims had been filed.
Wow.
The first one paid out was in June for a 48-year-old man named Zion, who died 8 days after his AstraZeneca dosage. His partner, that I told you about already. In Canada, the government has not given out a dollar amount yet, but they do report how many claims they are currently processing. They reported, now this is just of this summer, they reported 774 claims received. They have only approved 8 so far, but this is updated yearly. The last one was in June, and they say they will report us update the report again in March. Interestingly, there have not been claims paid out in the United States, the most litigious country on the planet, because according to the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, quote, the standard of proof for causation was not met and a covered injury was not sustained. So no one has met that threshold yet. It says one COVID-19 countermeasure claim, a COVID-19 vaccine claim due to the anaphylactic reaction has been determined eligible and is pending a review. But again, in the U.S., the litigation around seems to be around not who has a reaction or who made it or anything like that. It's more about who is enforcing it at this point, employers, universities. So then you have to wonder if there is this negative risk benefit for college students. Do they have a case? Right. You have to think those are coming.
Well, and also like what countries had AstraZeneca versus some of these other vaccines, what protections were in place for Pfizer and Moderna?
Right.
And a lot of these governments didn't have the same contracts that the United States did with them. I mean, the United States contract with like Pfizer and Moderna was like ironclad. It was like, you can't be sued for anything
basically.
If you're Pfizer. Like Pfizer can get off any problem.
Even if you were completely neglectful, right?
Yeah. The studies were, I mean, the contracts were amazing. I've read them and they're hilarious. It's like, you get everything and we get nothing. That's basically how the contract was written.
Yes. And we see, is it Bolivia that is a judge is looking into what contracts the government had with the pharmaceutical companies?
Yes.
It's either Bolivia or Brazil. It's a South American country.
I think
country.
It was Bolivia. But
So, you know, we may get something there, but that will only be that government's negotiations with pharmaceuticals. But it's worth looking at because you have to think that it was replicated around the world. So this is troubling information. You do with it what you will.
And we might get some more information too, because overnight, Senator Rand Paul grilled Dr. Fauci last night once again. And one of the things he said was, you have refused to tell us where are you getting your royalty payments from these drug companies? Who's paying you? You've told us you won't tell us. If we get in power, Republicans get in power, we're going to change the rule and you'll be back here and you'll be forced to disclose who paid you and how much royalties on your staff, where these drug company monies flowed to. So I would love to see that information, but Dr. Fauci being Dr. Fauci-ish once again. Well, we want to thank all of you for being a part of our show. Make sure you're subscribed to the show. Really, really appreciate you being a subscriber here. It's very easy to do and you can chat along with us. We've got some content coming out this weekend. We're working on a couple of big new shows and sort of documentary style pieces here at Redacted. So we're putting a lot of work into some different content for you. If you become a channel subscriber and if you become a channel supporter by going to redacted.inc, a lot of that stuff will be released to our channel supporters first. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a day, you can support what we do here on the channel. We are independent, so any support really helps us. If you go to redacted.inc, you can both get our newsletter and, of course, you can become a channel supporter over there as well. So we want to thank you so much for joining us here on Redacted.
Yes.
Indeed. All right. Well, have a great night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you live again here next week. Yeah. Be there.
4 p.m. Eastern time. Be there. Be square. We'll see you. Bye, everyone.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.